It's time now for America in the Balance. Brought to you by Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise. And now your co-hosts, Amanda Teagarden and James Parsons.
And welcome, freedom-loving Oklahomans, to another hour of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with James Parsons. We're both of OK Safe. That's Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise. Our website is ok-safe.com. That's ok-safe.com. Lots of good information there. On the front page, we want to draw your attention to this ongoing controversy over the establishment of a health insurance exchange in the state of Oklahoma, the reddest of the red states. James, can you believe it?
At this point, I'm starting to believe it.
Well, what we're fighting in the state of Oklahoma continues to be the idea that the state needs to institute or create an insurance exchange so that Obama doesn't come in and do it for us. And our contention is that you are doing it for him instead of him. And we're asking people to continue to contact their legislators saying we do not need nor do we want an exchange in the state of Oklahoma. And you can go back and listen to the interview we did with Michael F. Cannon of the Cato Institute, who gave a very good in-depth argument, the intellectual arguments against instituting an exchange in any way, shape, or form in the states. All right, well, today, now for something completely different, James, and I'm so glad to be talking about something besides exchanges. Aren't you sick of that?
I am getting a little sick of it. Can't you tell?
Yeah, you are sick.
I'm a little stuffy over it.
Yes.
But I got to tell you, this, what we're going into today, I got to tell you, I know about it, but I don't know it in depth, you know, a lot about it. So I'm more or less going to be listening and hearing what our guest has to say about the seeds and our food supplies and things like that, because I'm very interested. I got into it probably, I'm going to be honest with you, maybe a month ago. I started looking into it and really opening my eyes on what's going on with these patents with seeds and controlling our food supply.
Well, James, you've told us a little bit about what we're going to talk about because you keep saying seeds, and that's right. Well, what we're going to do, we're very delighted today to have as our guest Ralph Kubler, who is the owner of a wonderful seed supply company here in Oklahoma. It's in El Reno, Oklahoma. It's called the Patriot Seed Store, and their website is patriotseedstore.com, if you can imagine that, patriotseedstore.com. And you can buy heirloom seeds from this company right here, so you know exactly what's in them. And we're going to get some planting tips from Ralph Kubler, because it's springtime, and this is the time that we need to be thinking about preparing our gardens, how to prepare the beds, what kind of seeds you should choose, what works well in Oklahoma, and why we should be concerned about the source of food anyway. And Ralph, are you there?
I sure am.
All right. Well, thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule, because it is it's seed planting time, and you are our guest today. And give us a little bit about Patriot Seed Store, why you started it, how long you've been in this endeavor, and what's planting? What's a good thing to be planting in Oklahoma?
Absolutely, and thank you for having me. What you guys do is just absolutely phenomenal, and we're big supporters and appreciate what you're doing, and thank you for the opportunity to have us on. And as you have mentioned, right now it is planting time. We spend actually a lot of time going around helping people get started, because that seems to be the biggest key, is just getting started. And gardening certainly isn't a rocket science item, but it's just a matter of getting your hands dirty and seeing how things go. And we've been just absolutely busy as can be, planting gardens, community gardens, and some elderly folks, planting for them. And then the maintenance course would be their part. But our internet business, we've just been, it's actually exploded as far as how many people are seeing what's going on and are getting their hands on all the heirloom seeds, because that's really our only renewable food source.
Can you define what you mean by heirloom seeds, and what's the definition of that?
Certainly. The short version is, about 20 years ago, some chemical companies started genetically modifying some our vegetable seeds, our food stocks, and they started crossing, you know, corn with fish genes and or put viruses or bacteria in our genes that make them have a certain quality that they're looking for. And we're starting to see right now huge long-term effects by independent studies showing how, what this is really doing to us. And we can get into that here in a second, but the big kicker is that these genetically modified seeds, which is mostly what we see out there in the marketplace at storefronts, if you harvest seeds from this year's growth to plant next year, they don't grow. They're actually called terminator seeds, so that we as consumers have to go back every year and buy our seeds again. It's away from in the corner of the market on our food supplies. And we just think it's a crime against nature. God gave us these seeds, and they've worked fabulously for over 5,000 years. I don't think we need to be genetically modifying them, because then we always have our unintended consequences.
So and you only sell... Work. Yeah, you only sell heirloom seeds? I'm sorry, interrupt. You only sell heirloom seeds, which means...
We sell heirloom seeds, which are what they're like our grandparents used to plant, open field pollinated. Really, a good term is nature seeds. We're really passionate about the fact that, as I said, God gave us these seeds, and they work great. And that's our passion, is to make sure that we get these in as many people's hands as we can.
Well, right now, this is being recorded in early April. So what should people be doing in order to prepare their backyards or their beds? What should people be doing right now, and what should be being planted?
Well, right now is actually the perfect time. And I'll kind of summarize that by what we've been doing. We've been tilling ground, breaking it up, tilling it over. We put lots of peat moss in it, because in Oklahoma it gets awful hot and dry, and that dirt can pack. So lots of peat moss, and then the only fertilizer we use is rabbit waste, because it actually covers everything that your plants need. And we are preparing all our beds now by turning them over with the fertilizer, with the peat moss, getting them in rows, and now is the time to be planting literally all the spring items. We have a link on the website, which is a planting guide, which is put out by Oklahoma State University, and it's phenomenal. It's really simple, but it tells us right now, you know, now's time to plant really everything, your tomatoes, your corn. Potatoes was about a month and a half ago, but we've been planting our kale, our lettuces, our carrots, beets, turnips, all the things, and certainly our beans, because that's what we call our staple crops.
Where on your website, patriotseedstore.com, is that planting guide? Just to tell them, what do they click on?
It should be under, it should be under a contact us. It should have a link under contact us that takes you to it's a simple four-page planting guide. And like I said, it's really simple, and really planting and gardening is simple. Just a lot of people might think it's kind of like eating an elephant, and it's not. It's just a matter of getting started.
All right, so you should be getting your dirt ready, because you got to plant into the dirt, and you're recommending peat moss and rabbit waste. Where do people buy rabbit waste? This is the first time I've heard of this.
Well, I found a lot on, we have our, I mean, we personally, on our gardens, we have our own because we raise rabbits. But there's also on Craigslist and some other items, people around that actually sell it. And it's very inexpensive because it's plentiful. That's not an issue.
I'm wondering if Southern Agriculture would probably have some also on that. Okay, and so you've got, what's a good thing to be planting right now? We've missed the deadline for potatoes, but what would be good right now? Beans?
Yeah, right now is when we're getting our beans started, because you're about 70 days to harvest, depending on what variety you have on beans. And we're big proponents on beans, because one plant will give you up to 3 pounds of beans. So it's a highly productive item that you get great returns for just very little effort on your part. Plus, tomatoes is the time to get them out. A lot of people start them inside early as seedlings. We actually plant our seeds directly in the ground right now. We've found just personally over time that we end up having a lot healthier, stronger root system doing it that way. And you know, there's two schools. A lot of people believe in starting them inside early, and that's great. Certainly encourage them to do so. We like planting them straight in the ground. And then we've planted our kale and our lettuce and our Swiss chard, all those items, along with our carrots and beets.
What about
all the items? But now is really the time to plant everything that wasn't planted in the February cold months.
In the February in cold months. And On the soil preparation, I, like a lot of people, I live in Tulsa, and a lot of people around here have really bad dirt, and so we're into amending the soil to prepare it. And I'm reading a lot about different types of amendatory product. You mentioned rabbit waste and peat moss, but can you also add compost and other kinds of things to kind of make the soil healthier to begin with?
You can. And when it's possible, we certainly encourage raised beds, and that means 18 inches. But a raised garden bed, we find we get a lot better production out of, like up to 20% better production, because we're putting in, as you alluded to, we're putting in our own soil, our own rich mixed soil, if you will, combined with the manure and the compost, peat moss. But we put all of our own stuff in there, and so you get away from that Oklahoma clay. And it's really not a big deal to do. It's just, like, as we said, a matter of getting started. But that's if possible, we encourage the raised beds. If not, turn over a bunch of compost and peat moss into your soil, and you're going to find you have still a really good fertile soil.
How many hours of sunshine does a raised bed garden or a backyard vegetable garden need?
We recommend a minimum of 8 when it gets out into the summer months. We, in conjunction with that, we also encourage people to water early in the morning. And the reason is, if you water at night, then that water tends to stay on the plants all night long and can lead to some funguses and some undesired traits, black spot. However, if you water early in the morning, you get a good saturation. When the sun comes up, it actually dries the plants. So, at one, as opposed to watering at night, you don't have those issues. But then, two, if you water in the middle of the afternoon, the water droplets can actually act as magnifying glass and burn up some of your plants. So we also push early morning watering, and it takes care of itself throughout the day.
All right. Now, we're going to be doing, supposedly everybody's going to be working on their gardens, if they can, except James, who lives in an apartment. You're going to have to get a pot and put it on the balcony. Do you have a balcony?
Yeah, I do. And I'm looking on his website, and I see this 20-inch bed here, so I may be buying something pretty soon.
There you go, 20-inch bed. You can do that on a deck.
Sure.
You could. Or a big pot and put a tomato plant in it, anything to kind of get you started. All right, so we're doing this, and we're doing heirloom seeds because they are not genetically modified. Plus, you can harvest the seed from the crop, isn't that correct? And then use those seeds for the future crops, right?
Absolutely. And what we found is some of our personal seed stock we've gotten from our grandparents that they would keep the seeds from their best plants year after year after year, and we end up having a really strong old variety of seeds. And as people do this every year, they'll find that they'll end up having a super strong variety because they're always picking the best seeds from their best plants to store over for the next year. And seed saving is really a big deal. It's not extremely difficult, but it's just something that most people aren't exposed to anymore. We've all gotten away from the gardening as far as a country in mass, and simple things like seed saving is really going to become important in conjunction with a lot of things that are going on.
All right. Now, we're doing this, and you're promoting heirloom seeds, and that's all that you sell. And you mentioned while we were preparing to go on to the on for the show that you had a lot of information. You've been looking more into genetically modified foods and the food supply, and you used the phrase that if people knew what was happening, it would knock their socks off. Give us a little taste of what you've been finding and what your research has shown.
Certainly. Thank you. As I said shortly ago, 20 years ago, they started genetically modifying our seeds, and that does a bunch of things. It's actually chemical companies that are genetically, on the genetic basis, changing our seed stock so that they can use Monsanto. They're changing our seeds so that you can actually go spray Roundup, the chemical defoliant, on the plant that's growing our food stuff, and it won't kill it. It's to kill weeds, but it won't kill the plant. Well, a big major factor is that the plant is actually absorbing those toxins into the plant itself, and we eat that. And the big four, corn, soybeans, canola, and cotton, that's pretty much all you're going to find. It's very difficult to find corn that's not GMO corn. 80% of what out there is. And as I alluded to, we're starting to find long-term health effects of the GM crops. As in the mid-90s when they started doing this, since then, diabetes has really skyrocketed, along with Alzheimer's, MS, and a couple other items. that we're starting to see a correlation to. Obesity is another one. All of our soft drinks have high fructose corn syrup in them that all comes from GM corn. And there's starting to be connections that are starting to get really scary as far as what's going on. And if I can kind of link this a little bit, we feed our cattle, our livestock, genetically modified corn, and it sprays the chemical on it, and also we cross corn with fish genes. I mean, the unintended consequences are just starting to be nightmarish. Well, in conjunction with that, just a couple weeks ago, the FDA approved genetically modified alfalfa. So now all of our food that we feed to our food stocks is genetically modified. The Pandora's box just keeps getting bigger and bigger, and that genie isn't going to go back in the box when we start being concerned about cross-contamination.
And we're big beef eaters in this country, so the beef, the cattle, ground beef, hamburgers, fast food restaurants, wherever you see a distribution of beef, that cattle is fed corn that's genetically modified and now alfalfa that is genetically modified. They absorb it into their system, and it's in the meat, and then the people are ingesting it. And what you're saying is that the evidence shows that people are developing more and more diseases as a result of this.
Yes, we sure are. And like I said, the independent studies are starting to come out, and they're starting to get really scary. And there was a period of time ago, the FDA agreed that a GM vegetable was just the same as a non-GM vegetable with zero testing, nothing going on behind the scenes, and it's more of what we see everywhere else. That they're just saying, here, this is what you have to have a choice of. And I'll kind of link that a little bit in that we're seeing food inflation right now, where corn's doubled in the last year, wheat's more than doubled in the last year. If you remember last summer, Russia had a drought and lost most of their wheat crops. They no longer export, they import. China had floods, they lost their rice crop. With the Japanese disaster, their rice crop is no longer any good. And we in the U.S. are right in the middle of a drought. Actually, in Oklahoma, the last 4 months have been the driest 4 months since the Dust Bowl. So our wheat crops are going to suffer. And we already know that the government does not have the required food stocks that they're supposed to maintain. Our national food warehouses, if you will, are literally empty. So we don't have any reserves. There's shortages everywhere. Gasoline's going up. And for instance, where I live in El Reno, at the local store, milk is $4 a gallon. So as we see food inflation coming on, along with rising fuel prices, as we're seeing at $3.60, $3.70 a gallon, our food's going to get much, much, much more expensive. And with just a little bit of effort, we can grow our own food. And one would be surprised the volume of food you can get out of your garden and avoid going to the store buying things that we don't know what's in.
Are you familiar with a book called Square Foot Gardening?
I sure am. And actually, that's on my website, too.
Oh, good. I picked that up last fall, and we're working on building a frame. But the author indicates that you can do away with a lot of those wasted areas, which are the rows between your rows, where nothing is growing, and you can make a 4-foot by 4-foot garden very productive and enough food to feed your family. Salads and some vegetables and a lot of beans and carrots using 4-foot by 4-foot frame of a raised bed garden that's only about 6 inches deep but you make all the soil in there. It's not the soil from your backyard. It's a special mix. And so you're not really going to take a lot of space. People sometimes are only in condos or in smaller areas or in have trees and maybe not have enough property. So this would be supplemental food, not your main food source, because number one, it takes a while for this stuff to grow and it doesn't grow all year long, but this would be the necessary food supply to help offset what could be coming to us with your highly inflated food prices.
Absolutely. We're working diligently because what we're really concerned about is urban communities where, as I said, if we've had high gas prices, in 2008 it was $4 a gallon, but we didn't have food inflation with it. Now that we have food inflation and couple that with rising gasoline prices, that really hits the pocketbook at the supermarket in a fast time. And so we've really been working on developing programs. For instance, you had mentioned that James lives in an apartment, community gardens are starting to take off where an apartment might set aside a certain fence off a certain area where they, as a community, work on the garden. Even little neighborhoods are starting to do that, and we're starting to see townships starting to give up a couple acres of the township's area, and they'll put in a community garden where, you know, they'll take a third of it and provide it to the people that work in the garden, a third of the produce, and they'll take another third of the produce and provide it to people, you know, food shelters where they can actually give it to people that are needy. And then the last third they'll sell to fund the actual operation. And we're starting to see, as because we're a urban society, that that's becoming a very big need. And we're starting to see a lot of growth in that area where people are starting to realize that some of these solutions are going to come locally. If the average produce comes from 1,400 miles away, that's just rife for any hiccup whatsoever. All of a sudden, the shelves are bare at the grocery store.
My family and I were on a recent trip, and we had to go to Illinois from Oklahoma to Illinois. And, of course, you cross through many acres and acres and acres of corn farms. And what we saw were signs along the road, the highway, saying that these crops were all used for ethanol. And what has that done to the food supply when corn, which is a staple of food, not only to feed people but to feed the cattle, is now being used for fuel? What has this done to the food supply and the cost of food?
Well, at the risk of using this word, that's a brilliant point, is that it's literally a crime, because corn isn't the best item out there to use for ethanol. Yet with the subsidies that our government's giving these farmers, we're actually, as you've heard time and again, and you're really saying it, is that we're burning our food in our gas tanks when there's other things that we don't eat that would even actually provide better quality ethanol, while we're in fact shorting our population and the world's population on corn that we need to eat. Because we've seen food riots everywhere, and the ethanol, to me, is just a non-starter. It doesn't make any sense at all where people are hungry. Corn, as we said, corn's doubled in the last year, and now we're going to continue to subsidize and increase the required amount of ethanol made. It's just a non sequitur, when we're obviously seeing a whole lot of that all over the place.
Well, we sure don't need to reduce our the availability of food within our own borders of our own country for our own people, given the current unrest in a lot of countries. And as you said, you know, we're facing possibly another drought here in Oklahoma that's quite damaging to the food supply and for cattle, not only for people but for cattle. And a country that cannot feed itself is in a very vulnerable position.
Right. And I got to say that I'm part of that growing generation that grew up in the urban city, so I never had the experience of growing anything, of making anything, always going to the grocery store. So now I'm literally behind on all that kind of thing. And you're saying you can help someone like me?
Absolutely. That really is our mission. I'll be frank, we're motivated by God in that we see what's going on, and it's a matter of we're seeing so many people across the country turn off the TV and go outside and start gardening, because I've got two little kids, and I just promised myself that if I ever look at them and say, I'm sorry, there's nothing for you to eat, that's my fault, and that's something I'm not going to do. So by virtue of that, and we homeschool, they're starting to learn how to garden, and you know, they'll go out on their own and bring in baskets of food, and we're starting to see seminars all over the place. We actually are doing one in conjunction with a bunch of other groups on the last day of this month, on Saturday, starts at 11 out at Lake Wes Watkins, which is teaching people how to can, and it's free. But we're teaching people how to can, we're teaching people how to garden, we're teaching them how to put back some food in case of an emergency, and just trying to share with people that this stuff's okay to do. It's, you know, it's certainly going to be necessary. And kind of along those lines, our key item, and always has been, that's 95% of our sales, is the Patriot Seed Vault, which has 5,000 seeds in it, which certainly sounds like a lot of seeds, but if we look at it from the point of view that, you know, that would plant a family of four can plant these seeds for 4 to 5 years while they learn the skills of gardening and harvesting seeds and canning. It doesn't give them just a one-time shot. They've got some time to master the skills while not, you know, planting all their seed stock, and then hopefully they can find something next year. It's kind of an ongoing process, but we get phone calls from across the country where people are or as questions like you're asking, where do we start? How can we do this? And how can we do that? So the seminars, like I spoke about at the end of the month, are really being extremely well attended.
All right. We've got about 30 seconds left, and we're talking with Ralph Kubler of the PatriotSeedStore.com. What's the event again? Give us the date and time and location.
It is April 30th. I don't have my calendar. It's the last Saturday of the month. I believe it's April 30th at the Pavilion at Lake West Watkins at 11 a.m. And we haven't put it on the website yet. I will shortly so that people will be able to refer to it. And we're going to have, there's going to be two seminars of everybody, which means there'll be two canning seminars. People learn how to can food.
All right.
Gardening seminars and some others.
All right. That's the music. We'll have to have you back, Ralph, to discuss this again. And that information will be on your website shortly. And this is Amanda Teagarden in studio with James Parsons, America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. Stick around for the second half.
To promote your business on the internet, the Truth in Focus Radio Network reaches listeners locally in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and all across the United States. The shift is on from traditional media to internet marketing. Stay on the cutting edge with your business. Advertise with us today. Email radio at truthinfocus.org. You heard the word, so will they. Email us at radio at truthinfocus.org.
Canyon State Wireless is your hands-on source for design, sales, service, and installation of the best land mobile two-way radio systems. Check us out on the web at canyonstatewireless.com or call us for specific information at 866-458-4772, 866-458-4772. Canyon State Wireless. When you're serious about communication.
Thank you.
And welcome back to the second half of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with James Parsons with an S on the end,
right.
And we're both of OK Safe.
And you may want to explain a little bit of the music. What's the choice of the music?
Only
there?
Here can you go from Antonio Vivaldi's Spring to Ted Nugent, and that's what we had. But it was appropriate music for the subject, which was it's spring, it's time to plant, and it's a beautiful time of the year.
While that was going on, I made a simple little comment, and I'd like for you to comment on what I was thinking. Is my fear is that in the upcoming years, as these community gardens continue to grow and people start planting, I have this fear that government's going to come in and shut even that down. So they'll be again. They have that control over the food. Now, what do you say about something like that?
I'd say that Tulsa City Council had actually tried to do that, regulate community gardens, instead of letting the people of the community come together and decide, hey, we have this extra spot of land, and we, in amongst ourselves, agree to grow certain crops and plants, and we'll tend to it, and we'll water it, and we'll harvest the food, and we'll share it amongst ourselves. Now the city council had to come in and do something. I'm not sure this is last year how that finally was resolved, but everything is fine until the government starts to come in to regulate it. I was thinking, what's that? It's an old phrase the president said, if it moves, they want to regulate it. If it breathes, you tax it.
That's right.
That's that kind of thing. Just leave everybody alone. I guess they think that they're going to be growing pot in their community garden, which hopefully not. You need to eat the food. But regardless, if neighbors decide to cooperate together and grow something, it's no business of the government. Unless they decide to grow, to harm, of course. But food is important. You have to have it. You have to be able to get to it. You have to have a good supply.
Mm-hmm.
And as we've moved toward a global economy and more dependency on other countries and this interdependence, as they've called it, we have become weaker and weaker in certain categories. It's just like being Greek. The island of Greece is totally dependent on food from elsewhere. That is not a strategic position to be in. That's a position of weakness. We were in the Caribbean, not that we go there all the time. It was a once-in-a-lifetime trip. Those people are waiting for tour ship cruise lines to show up. And when we got there, one of the inhabitants said this was the first cruise ship we'd seen in a week. They don't have jobs if there are no cruise ships. Man. They don't have food unless ships deliver it.
And I kind of feel that way. When I start talking about these seeds and planting the garden, I look at my own life. I understand the importance of it, but
You're dependent.
I'm in that generation that never learned how to do that kind of thing, and now I am at a disadvantage, and I'm waiting on, the corporation almighty out there to come down and send me the lettuce that I need, and I'm very dependent upon it.
Do you have some family with property?
I am very dependent upon it. Yeah, I do have family with property. But I will, it's something I'm going to have to invest in, time and knowledge, and get my feet, fingers green, and figure that out for my family.
Maybe you can do something with your church. Your church can help. This is what the church is supposed to be. If you got a hand, hey, great idea. How about the church?
As he was speaking, I was even thinking about the Old Testament where they even talked about building a community garden and putting part of it towards the needy. I mean, this was Old Testament
standard practice,
and we've gotten away from that. And me personally, I'm totally away from that. I need to really start to look at this and decide, not just to decide, but just to study it and to get involved and to change my way of thinking about the whole thing.
Well, I'm really encouraged that you're going to actually do something about this, this void in your life. All right. We've got what we're going to talk about the second half is, unfortunately, we are going to have to talk about the exchanges again just a little bit to give you an update. But just to show you that God is moving in this state and that it's not just OK Safe, but it's a whole lot of people in the state of Oklahoma are trying to address the issue of the runaway legislature. In the reddest of the red state, we have through several years of lobbying, been able to peel back the covers here, if you want to call that, the covers, and it's like, what is really happening? Who is really controlling the legislative process? We've had state questions opposing illegal immigration, opposing international law, opposing Obamacare, the Health Care Reform Act, laws passed, et cetera, and yet we seem to be
dealing with the same problems all over again.
Same problems all over again, even with Republican leadership, quote-unquote leadership in position. So there's somebody else who's is driving this train. And
of course, there's this frustration out there because we're thinking we're moving ahead, but in actuality, we seem to be stuck in...
We're at odds with the leadership here.
That's right.
The leadership is at odds with the will of the people. And I'm not talking the will of the people like pure democracy. What I'm talking about is our elected officials are not representing their constituencies. So what we've got is an audio from a meeting that was held on April 8th at the High Noon Club, which is held at the H&H Gun Range in Oklahoma City. This is a very popular Friday afternoon club. And it's not just for Second Amendment people, as is pointed out in the audio. Well, the guest speaker was Speaker of the House Chris Steele, who has been under attack, rightly so, for not addressing the issues that are on the hearts and minds of the Oklahoma citizens, but appears to be carrying the water, actually is carrying the water for the established political machine. And including one of the ones, the most contentious vote, not only against open government, but the one instituting the health insurance exchange, House Bill 2130, and ramrodding that thing through was a contentious vote. House Bill 2130 was contained the language for the health insurance exchange in Oklahoma, and creating this hub board that would direct the implementation of the exchange, and they're funded by the $54 million grant, the Early Innovator Grant. All right. So this High Noon Club met on April 8th on a Friday. Chris Steele was the speaker. And in the audience are some very well-informed, articulate people, including pastors. And what we have here is the audio of Pastor Dan Fisher, who is the pastor of Trinity Baptist Church in Yukon, Oklahoma. And this is the audio of him addressing Chris Steele at the High Noon Club on April 8th.
Benjamin? Speaker Steele, my name is Dan Fisher.
Yes, sir.
And I want to thank you for coming down here because obviously this is a hot seat and it takes a lot of courage for you to do this. So first, I've been there, so thank you. Secondly, thank you for your graciousness to be willing to meet with me before the session began on that Saturday morning. And I appreciate that more than I can say. Let me make a comment here and then just ask you a general question. I don't know that you can answer the question, but and I don't mean that you don't have the personal ability to answer it, but it's a tough question. What we're saying and what you're hearing, I think, can be best illustrated by just a couple of ideas here.
Okay.
Most Oklahomans are overwhelmingly conservative. We have proved that with presidential elections. In the very past election, we have had huge rallies down at the Capitol. I'm one of the leaders of the Tea Party. We've had thousands of people gather. Like, for instance, the immigration. Now, we get frustrated because it seems to be so difficult. It's not difficult at all. We don't want illegal immigrants in our state.
Yes, right.
I mean, it's just that simple. I know that you would personally agree with that, I would assume.
That's right.
We don't understand, though, why the committees find it then so difficult to pass conservative legislation and to stop it. Okay, here's another example. Open carry. We're one of 7 states out of 50 that doesn't have some version of open carry. We are one of the most conservative states in the country, but we can't get an open carry through our legislature. So with an incredibly conservative populace and electorate, we're incredibly frustrated when we can't seem to get that through. Here's another example, Sharia law and international law. Okay? We don't want any supreme law in our land but 2 things, the United States Constitution and the Oklahoma Constitution. We don't want any other supreme law, none. Okay, now, what we don't understand is why that's so hard to get enacted in one of the most conservative states in the country. And then one more example, health care. Here's how much of Obamacare we want. Zero. Okay, we want zero. Now, you may agree. And again, our frustration is, I think this is echoed. What I just have said is echoed, but I would imagine a large majority of the citizens in Oklahoma, not everybody's going to agree with that, but a large majority of us. What frustrates us is we believe all of those things, we petition for those things, we elect people to go in there and change these things, and then somehow the leadership structure, not blaming you personally, but the leadership structure and the rules and everything that's set up ends up derailing all of the very things we want the most. So what you're hearing from us is a frustration. What do we do to change that core problem? Because we're Judeo-Christian people. We're not ashamed of Judeo-Christian. We're not primarily Muslim. Now, there's room for them in America because we have freedom of religion. But most of us are not Muslim, and we don't appreciate all the preference given to Muslims because we're afraid we're going to offend them. They don't mind offending us. We're Judeo-Christian. We're not embarrassed. What do we do to be able to stop the shell game at the legislature and get this stuff through? That's what we're after.
All right, James, that was the audio, and we'll pick it up again. We're going to pause just a minute because there's 17 seconds of standing ovation for Dan Fisher.
Right, and that is the growing frustration of us all, is that we work so hard working in within our party, working with our elected officials to get all these ideas passed and through the legislature, and then for some reason they get stopped, derailed, and sometimes even ignored once they're in office. And again, it's very frustrating, and we sit back and we and he's asking, what can we do? And that is a question. You know, what is causing that derailment to happen?
Well, what's causing the derailment to happen is that the governor has an agenda. There's pieces of legislation. There are pieces of legislation that fulfill that gubernatorial agenda wherever she's getting her advice. And at the State of the State address, as you know, she said, this is what I'm waiting for, these pieces of legislation. She did not address illegal immigration, which you and I, if we were to read the bill, we probably wouldn't agree 100% with that particular piece of legislation, because generally who gets caught up into it is law-abiding citizens get caught up into the trap. So
right.
You have to be real careful with illegal immigration laws. But the open carry law, I mean, it's ridiculous that Oklahoma has a more restrictive open carry regulations versus Arizona, which is... can be, you know, John McCain was in Arizona, for heaven's sakes, and yet our law is more restrictive. And then the other issue, of course, was Sharia law. That addresses, referring back to State Question 755, which passed overwhelmingly in this state, saying that Sharia law or international law shall not be applicable in this state. And there are some other issues in there, but the reason for that is because that was a preventative measure, because Sharia law is actually being recognized in some states and, you know, in provinces of Canada. So it's a real threat. And by the way, for those who are not aware of it, Sharia law would be different than the Judeo-Christian foundations of our country. The two are not compatible. And then the other one, of course, when this is the one that we're interested in, James, is the statement against Obamacare. Our state passed State Question 756. We have filed a standalone lawsuit opposing the individual mandate and therefore the rest of the bill, because it's not severable, meaning it can't be separated from the rest of the law, Obamacare law. We are actively fighting the insurance exchanges, Oklahoma-based or otherwise,
right.
Oklahoma-created or otherwise. We're opposing that loud and clear. Yet there is an administrative agenda that is running rampant in this legislature, and they are not addressing these issues. And he is, you know, Dan Fisher was very polite, saying, you know, I'm not holding you personally accountable. Well, it goes on a little bit later on in the audio. Bob Danny gets up and says, well, that's not right. I am holding you personally accountable.
He is the leader.
Right. So let's go on to how Chris Steele responds to Dan Fisher.
Pastor Fisher, thank you, and thank you for the opportunity to meet with me as well.
This is Chris Steele.
I want to say, first of all, we passed seven. What was your bill number? That dealt with international law. 1552 passed out of the House. And in addition to that, there was a vote taken in the Committee on Open Carry last week. I understand it wasn't the result that you desired, but it was a fair vote, and in the process, nobody tinkered with the process in that regard. George Thott is the chair on the House side for the Immigration Committee. I think by anyone's standards, he's as rock-solid conservative as they come. We're trying to do things the right way. And the answer to your question would be that we just need to continue to communicate. And I understand and I sense a level of frustration, but I will tell you that cooler heads prevail. And if we can continue to work together, I believe that we will accomplish good things for Oklahoma.
Cooler heads prevail.
Yeah, that is a way. I'm learning that whenever you want to say cooler heads prevail, that means you are the one that has to quiet down so we can do what we want to do.
This reminds me of that attitude that the TSA agents have while people are objecting to the strip searches, the people who are objecting to going through the full body scanners, and they're writing their legislators, and they're objecting at the airports, etc., and which is an outrageous position to be put in as an American citizen, and yet they are told to be polite, calm and polite and civil, while of course all of your liberties are being stripped away and the government can see you naked. But you have to be civil. You have to be civil.
You have to have the cooler head.
You have to have the cooler head. So this is what he was saying. And he said on the open carry bill, and he said, you know, it wasn't the result that you desired, but it was a fair vote. Well.
and that's the point he's trying to get at. It gets stopped in the process.
We're trying to do the things the right way. That's what he says. And cooler heads prevail. If we can continue to work together, I believe we will accomplish good things for Oklahoma. Well, they're not working together with the people, hence the frustration. It is human nature to be frustrated, and if the shoe were on the other foot, which it needs to be, James,
right.
It really needs. We need to continue to flip this state back toward how it's marketed, the reddest of the red state. It's really, if these guys continue the way it is, it's going to be a blue or purple state.
Right.
Whatever that means, just because of the frustration level. It's red because people are pro-life.
It is red, but it's purple because our Republican leaderships are more purple than they are red.
Purple meaning progressive.
Progressive, correct.
They're progressive.
And that's what is so frustrating is that we have this value of church, family, pro-life, God as the Almighty, and it just doesn't get represented the way that we like up at the state capitol, and it becomes frustrating. Like, what else can we do? And I can give you the political answers: get involved locally, you know, throw your support behind a candidate and help and all that kind of thing. But at the same time, get frustrated when you have all these elected officials who run on a core principle of, let's say, Obamacare, and they promote that they're against Obamacare, and we believe that they're against Obamacare, and so we support them because of Obamacare. And then when they get in the office, it's a whole nother ball game, and that's what becomes so frustrating throughout this whole process, is once they're in there, they get in these committees, and they get into these meetings all together, and it seems the whole... Oh, what you say? The process just changes, and the commitment changes from what they had originally promised us on the campaign.
Because the agenda, the outcome is determined before they start.
It is.
And that's what it is. So this is almost going through the motions. So what we can do is throw as much opposition along the way as possible and to continue to help build the record, develop, create the record of not only their votes, but of their activities. And one place you could do that is post the results of votes by House District, by Representative, by Senator on libertyforge.us. If you go there, and if you live in Oklahoma and you're interested in creating a record by House District, by Senate District, of that particular elected official, and only want to deal with the elected officials around your area and not the whole state, go to libertyforge.us, and that would...
But let's go into some positive things for a second here, Amanda. And that is that in the end... And I guess not in the end, but in the, just recently, the Senate did.
The House passed House Bill 2130. Right.
Yeah, this is they passed 2130.
The Senate killed it.
The Senate did kill it. Now, now you're involved in another meeting with House Bill 1996.
Because bad ideas just never go away.
That's right.
It's like a character on a soap opera. You just thought he died, so now they're back again.
But the Senate was there, you know, praising and saying, hey, look, we ended
it.
We killed it. Hey, celebration, high five. See, we're against Obamacare. But what else is happening with that?
Well, that House Bill 2130 left the House on March 17th, and the Senate took possession of it thereafter, which meant that that chamber then had to deal with the bill. Because of the public outrage and the lobbying and the calls to the governor and flipping Tulsa County, and showing the vote, the House Bill 2130 was killed on the Senate, or said that we will not hear that language in that bill. And it has, and it's tied to the $54 million early innovator grant, which makes the insurance exchange here follow to the letter the exchange as it's designated in Obamacare, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. All right. So now what is happening? Some legislators are thinking, okay, now we'll do something because we have to do something. That's the argument. We have to do something in Oklahoma because if we don't do something, then the federal government will come in and do it for us. That is a bogus, hollow argument because the federal government cannot do it unless the states do it first. You can't get that message through. Maybe it is, but they feel that they need to. So Senator Bill Brown has this idea that they're going to come up with their own language, and he assures me, you're going to like it, their own language in the at the Senate to institute an Oklahoma-based exchange, and we won't have personal information sharing, et cetera. I haven't seen this language. Anyway, they were going to attach it to House Bill 1996. The rule is... the subject has to be pertinent to the original language in the bill. So it has to be a Title 36 insurance bill. They can't just attach it to a bill about gardening. It has to be attached to an insurance bill. This was the vehicle they decided this was what they were going to do. And it was going to be heard in the Retirement and Insurance Committee meeting on the Senate side this past Thursday. So I attended it, and a bunch of people were in there. There's 12 members of this committee. And it got to this bill, House Bill 1996, and it passes by a vote of...
5-4.
No, 6-4.
6-4.
There were three votes on it. The first vote is 6-4. Two of the legislators left the room. I don't know where they were for that first vote on House Bill 1996. So it's 6-4, and there was opposition to it. Plus, here's the miraculous thing. The title was struck, and there was no content. And yet they were supposed to vote on a bill with no content because... Senator Bill Brown said, we're working on the language and we're going to create an Oklahoma exchange, and that's the language we're still working on. So we just need you to pass this now empty bill so we can put it in there so we'll be ready for the floor.
Unbelievable.
That sounds like Nancy Pelosi, you have to pass it so you know what will be in it argument. And that's from a Republican legislator. All right. So then the vote, the committee meeting proceeded to continue, and they finished all their business, and then I was like, well, that's it. I closed up my computer and we're ready to leave. Senator Greg Treat said, made a motion to say, I would like to reconsider the vote by which House Bill 1996 passed. Dead silence. Senator Mike Mazie, who's our senator, leaned over to Bill Brown, who was the chairman, and told him to make an objection. So Bill Brown objected. The objection didn't get anywhere. The vote proceeded to, after much discussion, there about whether it needed a majority or a supermajority to pass on a reconsideration vote. And I don't mean to be too technical, but this is the procedure. And so it went to, shall the vote be reconsidered? So this is the second vote. Shall it be reconsidered? Well, that passed 5-4. So now there's only 9 guys in there. 9 senators. So it passed 5-4. Yeah, we're going to reconsider that vote. So now it comes to debate. You know, 2 people debated against this reconsideration and urging people to vote for it. One was Bill Brown, who's now angry and wants this bill passed because we've got to do something and we're working on the language, right? Senator Mazie also debates in favor of the bill, saying, freshman legislators, I just want to urge you to defer to the wisdom of the chair.
Wow.
So he's trying to send a message, right, to those freshman legislators that you may not know what's going on, but we do, and you better pass this. So then it goes to the vote, and it's a tie vote, 4-4, when it actually gets the votes. Shall House Bill 1996 pass? 4-4, it's a tie. There's no majority. The bill fails in committee. So I had to send out another email because the first email I sent out was like, unfortunately, House Bill 1996 got out of committee. But by the end of the meeting, there was this complete turnaround and that bill got killed. So Senator Brown, who's angry, is tidying up his papers as he's leaving, walks by my seat and says, you did this, meaning the collective you. I believe it's the collective you, meaning the citizens of Oklahoma killed this bill. And it's like Chris Steele's attitude, cooler heads prevail. Well, it's like, the attitude was, we know what we're doing. We're trying to do the right thing, yet no one has seen the language.
Right.
How can anybody agree?
And you are standing in the way from us doing the right thing.
Whatever that is, because right. They're going to outwit the federal government. That's the idea, the mentality. Well, let me back up. I'm trying to be fair, is that their belief, I believe, in their heart, is that they can outwit the federal government and come up with a different exchange. Yet when we ask for the model, they cannot produce one. The model would be the computer diagram mm-hmm. of what you're calling an exchange. And they can't produce it because it doesn't exist. And so what they'll have to do is find somebody that's got a model and will end up with the same model the federal government suggests to begin with, or mandates anyway. So that's why we're saying no exchange, because there's only one model, and it's the federal model for the technology. That's the other part, James. It's really hard talking to these people who used to be in the private sector about technology like it's some mystery. Like one senator said, I just want to build a website that tells people the cost of health care. When you go back and look at all the rules that created that, the administrative rules, they did that because now the state is in the operating room in the doctor's office with you, and they can see everything that you're doing in the doctor's office, and now the state has access to all of your medical records. That's how they did it. Mm-hmm. So he sees the website. You open it up, and here's healthcare costs for a knee surgery within a 50-mile radius in New Hampshire of this area, right, Concord. He sees that as just a... I guess he thought people would just called up the hospital and said, how much do you charge for knee surgery? What happened in order to make that happen is everybody's health cares became part of the state's record. That's how they did it. Hmm. Complete annihilation of privacy in the state of New Hampshire for medical records. And they outsourced the software program and the package to Maine. So there's no such thing as a simple website giving you personal information. They had to cross some barrier. A regulation, a privacy barrier, an institutional barrier in order to get that. So we're dealing with people who are naive about technology.
Right. So now that 1996 has failed, what can we expect now from this?
They're going to stick it in another Title 36 bill and try to create an Oklahoma exchange. So we're asking people to watch all the Title 36 bills that are still active. There's about a dozen of them. Call your senator, call your rep in Oklahoma and tell them, no way, shape, anyway, you call it no exchange in Oklahoma. James, that's the music indicating another hour of America in the Balance is over with. We'd like to thank Ralph Kubler of the Patriot Seed Store for being our guest. Check into that website, patriotseedstore.com. Now's the time to plant your garden. And as always, we like to say, may God bless you. ¶¶